On today's episode, we're joined by family life and sex educator Ariel Finlinson. We discuss all kinds of topics from misconceptions about sexual desire to harmful gender stereotypes and a new definition of sex. Ariel also shares some helpful tips for husbands, including patience, perspective, and practice. Ariel Finlinson is a women's sexuality educator and the host of the Ladies Talking Love podcast. She recently earned her master's in human development and family studies at Utah State University. A native of northern Wisconsin, she can't get enough of forests or fresh squeaky cheese curds. Her online course, From Pressure to Passion, empowers women to live up to the joy and fulfillment they deserve in their relationships. She is currently living in Utah with her husband, Kyle, and their four young children. We hope you enjoy the show. Hey friends, welcome to another episode of the Stronger Marriage Connection podcast. I'm Dr. Dave here at Utah State University, alongside Dr. Liz Hill, our licensed clinical psychologist. We're so excited to bring you the best research and tips and tools, along with a few ideas that will help you have the marriage of your dreams. Liz, I am so excited, thrilled for our guest today.
Yes.
She's actually a former graduate student of mine, probably the first graduate student that we've had on this. Former student, she's graduated now with her master's. She's absolutely brilliant. And we're going to be discussing some of the ideas and traditions that hold women back from living up to their potential for joy and fulfillment in their sex lives. So Ariel Finlinson, welcome to the Stronger Marriage Connection podcast.
Hi, Ariel.
Thank you so much. Excited to be here.
We are too.
Oh, thrilled to have you. Now, Ariel, can you give us let's start with a quick version of your journey into this area. How long have you been doing this work in this area of women, their bodies and their sexual desire? And what motivated you to actually take the dive into these deep waters?
Yeah, it started out, I think, just from my personal experience, right? Like a lot of us kind of go into these fields because of our own experiences in our life and things. And so I got married and I just had this hope deep down. Like that was something I'm so grateful for. I just believed that our sex life could be awesome, but it wasn't. And I didn't know how to access an awesome sex life. And I just believed that it could be. And so I started just kind of looking into books and trying to talk to people. And the more I got into it, the more I realized this is a really common issue for a lot of women and a lot of couples. And it doesn't come as easily as we want it to. And so then it kind of drove me. I started the Ladies Talking Love podcast. And a couple of years after that, went back to school, especially as a mom of young kids, I was like, I have to have designated time that I can really dig into this or it's not going to happen. So went back to school to get my degree and really dig in and get the research along with my own personal experience to then bring this out to couples and women, because I think we have such a great potential to have this be an amazing part of our relationship. But these like traditions and things often just need a little bit of reworking to make it work and thrive.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like one of those older traditions is that sex is for men, right, Ariel? And, yeah. And it's just not true. Sex is for both men and women. Well, even more so, here's what I think is interesting, David and Ariel, that it's only on the woman's body that we have that one particular part of that body that is for pleasure only. Men don't have that.
Yes.
Isn't that interesting?
It's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. So if we are created by a creator, he intended for pleasure to be part of sex for women in particular. Can we talk about this idea here a lot in private practice? This disconnect between for women and sexual desire. So often women will say, I just don't feel like it. Would you mind setting the record straight? What are some of the accuracies and the misconceptions about sexual desire?
Of course, this is a huge one. Like so many women, it's like, I used to have desire, but now I don't, or I've never had desire. Like, I don't know what people are talking about. And I think, and we should just throw this out, right? Like this body part is the clitoris. Let's just be completely transparent.
I didn't realize for women. I didn't say it. Usually I say it.
Right. And I think, but I mean, this is a huge thing, right? Like looking at the clitoris, like, I didn't even know that part of my body existed until I was in my 20s. I might have even been married. I don't remember exactly. And the pleasure center, right, for women, if we don't even know it exists, how are we going to enjoy our sexuality? And so then going into desire, Rosemary Basson, she's a fantastic researcher, but like for generations, for years, right? Masters and Johnson has been the research about sexuality, right? You like have desire that comes on you and arousal, and then you orgasm and have a plateau. And Rosemary Basson was like, this isn't what I'm seeing with women. This can't be accurate. So she kind of went in to try to figure it out. And she realized that especially for women in long-term committed relationships, and especially for mothers, right? This happens where desire isn't just the spontaneous thing that falls on us. And that's what is portrayed in the books we read, right? Like Pride and Prejudice, oh, you know, yeah, like yeah, all the right. cute little romance books and movies. It's like desire is this thing that happens and it comes on us. And if we don't have it, I guess we don't have it. But she realized that for most women in these committed relationships, desire is actually something that can be fostered, and that it's a choice, and that you get to, women are moving into sexual encounters because they're like, I want to feel more connected to my partner. I'm feeling loved. We just had this amazing conversation and I'm feeling connected. And so it actually sounds really unromantic because of the conditioning we've had over, you know, our whole life, but it's actually a choice. And I think that is actually really beautiful, because we get to choose to move into deeper connection with our partner. And then together we get to decide how we are going to make this work to bring in that desire, because we all have a desire threshold, right? And so Emily Nagoski, she talks a lot about that arousal happens first for everybody, but the desire for spontaneous people who it's like, okay, I feel desire right away, right? Like the arousal and desire is happening pretty much spontaneously. But for women, and men can also have what is termed often as responsive desire, we need to kind of figure out that arousal that needs to happen first to reach that desire threshold. And so you don't have to feel desire before choosing to move into an intimate sexual encounter. You get to kind of, it's like an experiment, right? Like, what is going to help me move in? Maybe I need a text earlier in the day from my partner being like, hey, I'm so excited to be with you tonight, like whatever. And then he gets home. We're just going to pretend this is the woman we're talking about. He gets home and it's like, I need some alone time because I've been touched out by the kids all day. Like, I'm going to go take a shower, right? And then all these things kind of lead up. And then maybe we move into a deep conversation or a wrestling match, like whatever is going to help you. And as that arousal comes, more physical arousal can happen too with touch and stimulation. And you get to find where your desire threshold comes in. And just because you don't feel it at the beginning doesn't mean that you can't move into the mood. I love, Dave is the one who taught me that phrase. I love that. Like, you get to choose to move into the mood, and with your partner, you get to figure out what that looks like for you.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So how do I feel? What do I want? Right? Two important questions for a woman to really ask.
Yeah.
Because it really is up to us. It sounds like you're really putting the responsibility, the onus on the individual, which I am all about. So how else can we rewrite that narrative then, please, Ariel, about desire?
I think a really important thing is just to recognize that you have desire. It just looks different than you might have thought. And just because it looks different doesn't mean that it's not desire. I think a lot of times we prioritize spontaneous desire and we say, well, this is desire. This is what it looks like. So I must not have it. And I think just kind of rewriting that and helping both partners realize, you might have a spontaneous desire partner in your relationship, helping both of you realize, like, we both have desire. It looks different. So what are we going to do to help both of us feel desire so that we can connect sexually?
Okay. Excellent. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks, Ariel. Ariel, first reminder, how long have you been married?
Almost 10 years.
Okay, yes.
So still kind of newbie, but not really. But
I like it.
Oh, yeah, your stuff is so helpful. Okay, I think there's some unhelpful, maybe even harmful gender stereotypes about men that limit women's sexual potential. What are some of these, and how do these misconceptions affect the way that women show up in their sex lives?
Oh, I love this question. This is one of the topics I'm so passionate about. And before jumping in, I just want to say that what we're talking about today with men hurts me because it makes such a horrible interpretation of men, but it's so common that we often don't even question it. And so for years in my own relationship, I didn't even ask my husband about this because I was like, I already know. I already know he wants sex all the time. I already know, you know, I didn't even ask him because I just assumed this is how all men were. So like I said, like these ideas of like men only want sex and men are always in the mood. And like we hear these, especially as women, as we're dating, like he's only after one thing, like watch out or he'll go as far as you let him. And so it's putting the pressure on women that we are the ones who have to like put the brakes on, right? Which goes back to desire. If you've been trained your whole life to put the brakes on because you're in charge, like it's hard to then recognize your desire. And so I think it just puts this really negative picture on men that this is something they can't control. So we as women have to be the ones to control it in relationships, and also makes it seem like it's this huge need. And if it's not fulfilled because it's uncontrollable, they're going to go to pornography or they're going to go have an affair. And so that is like the worst thing to get women to love sex, right? It's like you are doing this out of fear that your spouse or your partner is going to go somewhere else for this fulfillment, and or out of duty, because now I'm the wife, I'm the partner, like this is part of my job description that I keep you sexually fulfilled, right? And so I just think these stereotypes can be really hurtful for men and women because men might believe that that's how they should be. And so even research talks about like if a woman initiates and a man's not feeling in the mood, he's going to feel pressure that he needs to show up and pretend like he's in the mood because she's going to feel like maybe he's getting fulfillment somewhere else, or maybe she's not attractive enough or not good enough for him. And so it's on both sides really harmful. And we need to give both of partners grace that like we can both say no at times because we're tired, we had a hard day, or say yes at times because, wow, I want to connect with my partner and I see that they need deeper connection today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, powerful.
So bottom line, pun intended, maybe, men and women, we both feel that there's something wrong with us if we don't act, right? Don't have that desire as we see in Hollywood movies or read in the novels, like you say. Oh, bless all of us, right? Like you said, grace, right? grace all around. And so I'm imagining those same stereotypes exist for motherhood and women, that connection. What are some of those ways and how might they affect the way women show up in their sexual relationship, please, Ariel?
Oh, this is another one that hits deep because this really caught me like a couple children into motherhood. I realized like, wow, I'm miserable. Like people talk about that this should be the best thing to have kids and this is the most important work I'm going to be doing. And I am so drained. I have nothing to give and I just feel so lost. And this then, like we talked about a little bit with the myths, like can go into our sex life, right? Like our kids, especially when they're younger, like they can't do a lot for themselves and we have to give and give and give. And it can be really exhausting. And I think a lot of us as women haven't been taught healthy boundaries in this giving because like, right, we talk about Mother's Day. It's like, oh, my mom never thought about herself. And that's celebrated. And it's like, no, that is horrible and not healthy at all. Like, please don't do that. But we give and give and give. And then this translates into our sex life that if our husband or partner is like, hey, I need sex, I want sex, it's like, well, here's one more of my to-do list, right? That I gotta pull through. And then another aspect of this that is really interesting that research talks about is that a lot of us as women, when we talk about sexual fulfillment in the research, it looks like we might have similar levels. But when they actually dug in to find out what women are looking at in their sexual fulfillment for men, they're like, oh, it was a great experience. I felt connected. I felt loved. Like it felt good in my body. Awesome. I'm fulfilled. For women, they look at their partner. If he's fulfilled, I should be fulfilled too, right? So it's just this total discrepancy that as women, and especially as mothers, I think we're often encouraged to look to others, which is such a beautiful thing. But when it's taken to the extreme, we aren't looking to ourselves to make sure we're feeling fulfilled and making sure that we have healthy boundaries to stay healthy in our motherhood and stay healthy in our relationships, and to make sure that our sex life is also about us and about our fulfillment. And am I feeling good in my body? Am I feeling connected and loved through this? Instead of what a lot of the research shows and what was for me, right? For a long time, I was like, well, if he's fulfilled, I guess it was good, right? Like,
isn't that something that's just sad, isn't it? And I'm so glad you're here teaching us, inspiring us that, wow, this is a significant part of the body, right? For both men and women. And we really need to take that back. Talk about just a different way of glorifying, edifying marriage. I'm thrilled that you're here, Ariel, and doing the work that you are.
We'll be right back after this brief message. And we're back. Well, let's dive right in.
We definitely need this new definition of sex. Can you tell us more about why and what the new definition ought to be, please?
Yeah, of course. I for so long, right? And even now, it's like, if you hear the word sex, the first thing that comes to your head is intercourse, right? Like, if intercourse happened, sex happened. And I think that this is really harmful because this is, again, focused on male sexuality. For most men, orgasm can occur from intercourse, and most women cannot orgasm from only intercourse. And so when we have this idea that sex is just intercourse, and often sex ends after intercourse, we're leaving out a lot of what is going to help women feel fulfilled and feel pleasure in their sexual encounters. And so I think that as couples, it's up to us then, as we learn more about this, to redefine sex in our relationship. Like, what does this look like? And what can we include in our sex life to make it pleasurable for both of us? And for women, like we talked about before, like, the clitoris is the key, right? Like, vaginal stimulation can be great for some women, but the clitoris is the key for most women and what is going to help them feel the most pleasure. So how can we integrate that in? And also, if we need to kind of shift around the order, right? Like, sorry, we're going to wait a little bit on the person who can come faster, who can orgasm faster, and focus on the person who's a little bit slower and make sure that they're getting what they need. Or after the faster person goes, we're going to focus longer on the other person. Like, you get to decide in your relationship what is going to work and make sure that you're both getting focused on and redefine it. You can even give it a new name if you want, right? Like, if sex is too tainted and you can't get the intercourse away from sex, like, call it something else, like lovemaking or whatever you want, that makes it just more broad to include both of your pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Ariel, I'm curious, listening to you, how would you suggest that husbands can best support their wives in living up to what you're talking about, this sexual potential? What can we do in this, again, heterosexual marriage, a husband and a wife here? What role does the husband play here? How can you support him?
Oh, thank you. This is so important because I think, just looking at my own experience, like, it can be so frustrating for, we're going to talk about that the wife, right, is the one who's learning to orgasm and struggling, right? Like, it can be so frustrating for the husband. Like, I want to help her. I want this to be good, but I don't know what to do. And she doesn't know what to do. And it can just be so frustrating. And so I think patience is a really important aspect of this, to be patient with your spouse. Because I mean, just looking at our anatomy, for men from a very young age, you are taught to, like, touch your penis, right? If you're going pee or whatever. And like, for women from a very young age, it's like, do not touch, do not know what's happening. It's internal. It's not as visible. And so we just don't understand our bodies as much, which is really sad. And so just patiently encouraging your wife to explore, to figure out, like, let's look at a diagram, right? Like, let's figure out where things are in your body. Take a mirror. If you're the woman, like, take a mirror and look at your vulva, like, figure out where things are, explore different touch. And then you can explore that together. Whatever your tradition, faith tradition, your beliefs are, like, you could explore it by yourself. You could explore it together, but work on this and make it a priority to just discover what feels good for the woman, because she hasn't, it doesn't often come as easily, and she hasn't been encouraged to even know, like we talked about, right, Liz? Like, when did we even know we had a clitoris, right? Like, we don't even know these parts of our bodies. And so just being really patient and also encouraging that, like, I want this to be good for you, and keep that dialogue going. If you said it once, it's not enough, right? Like, I want this to be good for you. And during sexual encounters, like, figure out how to communicate when something doesn't feel good and when something does feel good. Cause it can, it's a vulnerable space. And if a wife is like, ah, stop that, right? Like, that can be really hurtful. So talk about outside of the bedroom. What can we do when something doesn't feel good so that I know, cause I want to know, but I don't, it can hurt when it's presented this way. How can we talk about this better during encounters? And how can you let me know that I'm on the right track during a sexual encounter? So I think having those conversations outside of the bedroom are really helpful, and just keep that dialogue going. Like, this is for you. I want this to be good for you. I want you to help me know, because I can't know if you don't know.
Mm-hmm. And both partners saying that to the other, right? I want this to be good for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really great. You have an exceptional course, From Pressure to Passion. Love that title, by the way, Ariel, From Pressure to Passion.
Thank you.
Is it in a nutshell? That's beautiful. What do you wish that women understood about their potential for a sexual relationship with their spouse?
I just want women to realize what a deep and meaningful part of their relationship this can be. It's not the only important thing in our relationship, right? But when it isn't good, it can really affect the other parts of our relationships, because when it is good, you can feel so much more empowered as an individual. You can feel way more connected as couples. A person I had on my podcast, Dr. Batsheva Marcus, but she's another sex educator. But recently she talked about, she's like, when a wife might not be having sex with her husband, if he leaves his socks on the floor, she's like, oh, this is so annoying, right? Like, put these away. But like, if you're having sex, that might just be like, oh, he forgot his socks again, right? So like, even though it seems disconnected, all the parts of our relationship interact. And they're put together and they cross. And so if our sex life is struggling and we're not feeling connected, it's going to bring down the amount of intimacy and connection we can have in other parts of our relationship. And they play off of each other, right? Like, the more connection outside of sex can bring that more connection into sex. The more connection in sex and the better it is, it can bring that into other parts of our relationship. And so I think just recognizing, number one, that it is a really important part of your relationship to foster. And then number two, that it isn't all of your relationship, but with that connection in sex, you are going to be able to have a more thriving and flourishing and beautiful, empowering relationship than you thought possible.
You're so inspiring, Ariel. I think that's very cool. And a sexual connection, Dave and Ariel, it's happening in and out of the bedroom, right? It's not just in the bedroom. It's how we treat each other day in and day out. It's the soft, kind touches, the welcome touches, right? Maybe the surprise touches even, or the kisses that are out of the blue. I love your perspective. It's just so, so, so tremendous for all of us. Where can listeners find out more about you, Ariel, your podcast? Where are you on social media? And this, of course, exciting new course, From Pressure to Passion.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Ladies Talking Love is my podcast, and ladiestalkinglove.com is my website. And then on Instagram at ladies.talkinglove. And I've actually made a freebie. It's called The Top 10 Questions to Ask Your Spouse About Sex, to kind of get some of these conversations going. And I will make sure and share the link so you can access that and then find more information about my course. I'll be having a free masterclass that is going to be great just by itself. We're going to dive into some of these things, give you some good insights. And then if you want to learn more and would love to work more would like to work more in group settings and get to ask Q&A with me, that's accessible through the course.
So sweet. Great.
Oh, love it, Ariel. And I'm just putting another little plug. So I've actually seen, you know, it's one thing to say, hey, yeah, you should go check this out. But I've actually worked with Ariel as a graduate student through this, and she did workshops, and just the feedback was phenomenal. These women were like, why did I not know about this earlier? So I'm just saying, you've got to check out the course. You got to check out the website. Her podcast is amazing. It feels like, Ariel, it should be like required. It should be like all women required to go through this because they don't really, you don't know what you don't know until you're like, oh, and then to know, we got the feedback. Other women are kind of having these same types of questions and concerns, and they could open up in these classes.
Yes. And it's just so sad because we don't know. And it's like, we have so much that we can have, but we need to learn from other women what works and how to access this, because our partners aren't women in heterosexual relationships and they don't know. So
because that's how we got here, is we learned from other women also, right? In kind of a negative way, right? Our mothers or grandmothers who didn't know any better either. So we're still learning from women how to do it well, how to embrace it. Very well. Very good.
Yeah. Ariel, hey, we like to ask all of our guests this question, and that the big question is, what is the key to a stronger marriage connection?
Yeah, I feel like this kind of falls into three categories for me. My sister-in-law actually asked me this a couple months ago, like, what do you think makes a successful marriage? And I thought about it, and there were three things that came to mind. I think the first is commitment, that a strong marriage, it takes work. And it's kind of like we talked about with spontaneous desire, right? Like, it doesn't just fall on us and work. Like, we need to put in the effort and the commitment to say, hey, I'm here through the thick and thin. Let's figure this out and grow a deeper connection and deeper love. The second one is humility. Because it can be hard to acknowledge that you're wrong, to admit that you're contributing to some of the problems, to allow your partner to share things that are hurtful to them. And so I think humility is key. And then the third is vulnerability. When your partner comes, when you come, it's a risk to show vulnerability. It's always a risk, but I think that is what creates the momentum for deeper connection, is the risk. Because if your partner responds in humility and can listen and can accept that vulnerability of you, that is what is going to foster deep connection and an ability to move further into your relationship and thrive.
Man, I love those, Ariel. And you can see, just that gives you a little bit of a taste of the type of information you're going to receive from Ariel. She's spot on all of that. Ariel, what's your takeaway? Do you have a take home message? We call it our takeaway of the day that you hope our listeners will remember.
Oh, that's a hard one. We covered a lot of good things. I think the biggest takeaway is to give each other grace. To realize that your sexual relationship, just like any part of your relationship, is going to take time. I think that for a lot of us, we go into a sexual relationship and think like, well, I guess that's what it is. That's what it's going to be like the rest of our lives. Instead of recognizing that, just like learning a new instrument or a new sport, where we give ourselves so much grace to get better and to practice, that our sex life is the same and it's going to take practice. And I think that can feel frustrating at times, but I think that's actually one of the beautiful things about it, is that it's going to get better because we're going to grow more in our relationship and become closer over the years. And it might change, but that change can be more connecting and more beautiful. And just allowing each other grace, allowing change, and allowing our sex life to be something that progresses along with other parts of our relationship.
Yeah, I love that, Ariel. I love that. Liz, what about you? What's your takeaway of the day from our discussion with Ariel?
You know, I'm kind of putting a few pieces together, and maybe the biggest takeaway is this question to ask ourselves as women is, where did I get my information? Where did I get this belief that sex is for men, for instance, or that good girls don't, right? That many of us has heard through the years. Where did I get that information? And can I explore something different? Can I open my mind and hang on to someone like Ariel Finlinson and her great program, From Pressure to Passion? Good information. Where am I getting my information, and how do I improve the quality of that information? And Dave, what's your greatest takeaway, my friend, from our interview today?
Yeah, so much good stuff. I love that Ariel has touched upon in a couple of these with this, with the patience, with the practice. And I'll add another one, and that is the perspective, being able to see things from another person's perspective. Ariel, I can't remember if this was in our discussions or not, somewhere I've seen this, that for like, the, you know, great sex, the man needs to focus on the woman and the woman needs to focus on the woman, right? That it's like, boom, we need to be actually focused on that. And that hit me. I was like, yes, right? Because that her mind, because it's, you know, thoughts, it's on kids and it's on everything else. But for her to really focus in, it has to be almost internal, not in a selfish way. But am I right there? Is there some truth to that?
Oh, completely. I'm so glad. I'm like, you have to say that again, Dave. Like, the man focuses on the woman and the woman focuses on the woman. Yeah, I think that sex is such a beautiful space. And as a believer in God, I really think that it's designed specifically that way, because as women, we are designed to give a lot, especially if you've had children and you're pregnant and after birth, and if you decide to nurse or not, just like all the things physically, even if you haven't had kids, just to menstruate monthly, like your bodies give so much. And then our society also is like, give to your kids, give to your husband. And I feel that if we as women can really tune into ourselves and make sex a space where we allow someone to focus on us, a lot of beauty can come in that. And that doesn't mean, I'm not saying like this shouldn't be good for men. If you think that, you didn't hear me, but to allow it to be a space where we allow someone to serve us and to focus on us.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
I think it's important. I really do. Yeah. I think that's key. Oh, Ariel, thank you so much for taking time to join us today. We'll post all those links on the show notes on our website. We will give you a big shout out. So
thanks
so much for coming on and sharing more about such an important topic today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. That's it for us, my friends. Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Stronger Marriage Connection.
And do remember, it's the small things that create a stronger marriage connection. See you next time.
Thanks for joining us today. Hey, do us a favor and take a few minutes to subscribe to our podcast and the Utah Marriage Commission YouTube channel, where you can watch this and every episode of the show. When you hit the like button and leave a comment, your feedback helps us improve the show. And don't forget to share this episode with a friend. You can also follow and connect with us on Instagram at Stronger Marriage Life and on Facebook at Stronger Marriage. Be sure to share with us what topics you want us to explore or what you loved about today's episode. If you want even more resources to improve your relationship connection, visit our website at strongermarriage.org, where you'll find free workshops, webinars, relationship surveys, and more. Each episode of Stronger Marriage Connection is hosted and sponsored by the Utah Marriage Commission at Utah State University. And finally, a big thanks to our producers Rex Polanis and Alexis Alcott and the team at Utah State University. And you, our audience, you make this show possible.